So our goal for the past three sessions has been to inspire one another to grow as givers in ways that are realistic and strengthening and energizing, which is really different for every person. Different things are realistic and different things inspire different people. So I hope that over the past couple of weeks, and including tonight, I hope that you know we've kind of like presented a menu of options that everybody can take something away that works for them. And I want to start this week by asking, how did the mantra and the mission for last week go? So the mantra from last week was find a way to say yes, and the mission was to identify situations that are within our CVP, our Chesed Bechira point, that feel like a little bit of a stretch for us, but still realistic, and find a way to say yes to them to engage in a healthy stretch we can feel good about. If everybody forgot to do it, it's totally fine, but if anybody did it and had something that they wanted to share, the floor is open.
I actually emailed you about it. It wasn't so much me, but my husband. We were in New Jersey for the weekend, and I happened to see on Facebook that someone that he went to law school with's father passed away, and they were sitting Shiva. And so I was like, we're in New Jersey, we're driving home, there's a minute in the morning, do you want to go? Like, I'll get our stuff ready and whatever, and you can go. And so he did. And so it meant like I took care of the kids and like got our stuff ready while he was there, but he was able to stop with the minyan and pay a shiva call, someone who would never have otherwise been able to do that.
That's amazing. Thank you for resharing that. Sharing it more broadly.
It was you, because if you didn't do that chesed for him, he couldn't do that chesed for his friend.
For sure. You let him off the hook. He didn't have to do any other packing. Okay, I'll share one. Came up for me. I think I mentioned last week that something that I have struggled with over the years is sharing my teaching materials. So recently somebody asked me, somebody who is teaching a class that I've taught in the past. I already shared a few things with him, but he asked me for one particular set of materials that I worked very hard on and I feel really attached to. And I was struggling with it because on the one hand, like, it's just sitting there. Like, nobody's doing anything with it. Like, why shouldn't people use it? And why shouldn't more Torah be spread? And, you know, this is his first time teaching this class, and he has so many hours of prep that he has to do. Like, I would love to make that easier for him. And at the same time, I just felt really uneasy about, like, this just, like, it was, I felt like it was, like, my baby, and it was hard for me to let go of it. So I was trying to think, you know, maybe I'm not there yet, and is there, like, a creative way that I could say yes to this? So I found a different resource online that was already made public, and I shared that with him, and I tried to, like, really put in the thought to, like, which pieces would be helpful to him, and I took some screenshots, and I said, like, if you click here, I think that would really speak to your students, and so, you know, maybe one day I'll share my materials with him also, but in the meantime, I felt like at least I didn't just say no, like, at least I, you know, found a way to say yes so that I could try to help him in some sense. Okay. Okay, so this week's shiur is about barriers to chesed, and we're gonna approach this topic in three stages. Stage number one is identifying what are the barriers, what are the challenges that make it difficult for us to do chesed. Step number two is analyzing those barriers and deciding how do we want to navigate them. And then step number three is, after we've analyzed the barriers and we've decided how do we want to approach them, is actually attacking them. And attacking them could mean either we just make a choice to embrace that barrier, and I feel like barrier has a negative connotation, so maybe I should have called it like a challenge or a boundary or something like that. Sometimes it's a very important boundary where we feel like we want to nurture and respect that boundary. And other times we might find that that's a barrier that we'd like to overcome. So we're going to identify, we're going to analyze, and then we're going to attack. Okay, I really appreciate everybody's challenges that they submitted this week. None of these are direct quotes from anybody, but and many of the people who submitted, like, you overlapped with each other. Some of these were challenges for more than one of you, so I tried to kind of consolidate and organize them a little bit. So as I'm going to just read the challenges. I tried to organize them in different categories. As I'm reading them, if you could either make a mental note or make a physical note, anything that resonates with you, because we're going to come back to those later on.
Did you get a lot of us submit things?
Yes, thank you. If you still want to submit, like, I'm, you know, anytime, just call me and tell me what your barriers are. Okay, so the first category is physical or logistical challenges. So here are some examples. Sometimes chesed comes at a major cost, whether financial, emotional, spiritual, or time-wise. Is this chesed worth the cost? Every chesed I do is taking time away for something else on my plate. Even if I can make the time for chesed, I'm not sure if I should do that at the expense of other opportunities. I want to give, but I worry that my family and I won't be left with enough time or money or space or energy. I can get resentful when the chesed ends up being something totally different than what I expected and committed to. I wish I could know in advance exactly what I'm signing up for so I know if I can do it. Okay, so those are kind of like, you know, we'd love to do it, but I don't know, you know, I'm juggling a lot of other things and I don't know if the cost is okay, or I don't know what I'm committing to in advance, so I don't know logistically if I can do it. Then we had some values challenges that came up. What about chesed opportunities that conflict with my values? What if I don't believe in the cause? I believe in putting family first. How do I balance my family's needs with doing chesed for others? Is it right to give to the person if I don't know if, oh, sorry, is it right to give if I know the person doesn't really need it, or what they're asking for is not what I believe is best for them? And then there were emotional challenges. It's hard to see people in situations that are so broken. Sometimes I don't know where I will get the emotional strength to handle it. Sometimes I know what I can give is only a drop in the bucket compared to what the person needs. It's hard to feel that what I'm doing makes a difference. I want to run to do chesed, but it's hard to feel excited about it sometimes. How can I stay motivated to give? Certain types of chesed are really out of my comfort zone because they're just not my personality. How much should I stretch myself when it's against my nature? Sometimes people show no appreciation for my chesed or even complain about what I've given them without acknowledging my effort. This type of recipient makes it emotionally hard for me to keep giving. I feel like chesed encourages others to take advantage of me. I don't want to be a doormat. A lot of those resonated with me. I don't know if anybody's feeling the same way. Okay. Those are the barriers, right? And the first step is just identifying the barriers. For me, I find that this in itself is such a valuable task because as I've taken a step back, there's something... Rachel Zimmerman, who used to work for JCFS and then worked for Madrigos and now I think works at Hannah Sachs. I've watched her a number of times do boundary sessions with students at Hill Torah. So talking about like boundaries and identifying abuse and how to navigate boundary crossings and things like that. So she talks about this uh-oh feeling. Like you're in a situation and you're like, uh-oh, like this, you know, you just have that like gut feeling like this is not okay. So sometimes we get that uh-oh feeling in chesed. Like, I'm just not comfortable with this. This is not okay. And just taking a step back and trying to dig a little in ourselves and trying to understand where is that, what is it that's making me uncomfortable about this situation? For me, I just found it really, really just a very helpful exercise because I learned things about myself I didn't know. Like, I discovered anxieties and you know, mindsets and values that I had in myself that I didn't even know that I had until I was, you know, in those situations where something made me feel uncomfortable. So what do we do with that uh-oh feeling? And sometimes that uh-oh feeling is really important because it's telling me there's something important here that I need to pay attention to. And again, other times that might be something that we want to overcome. So I think there's two sources that we're going to explore here tonight that I think are both helpful in navigating that balance of chesed. How do we decide when we say yes to the chesed, even if it's uncomfortable, and even if there might be a challenge we have to overcome, and how do we decide when this is not the time to say yes? Okay, the first source number four, is from the Rambam Hilchot Deot. And this is a famous concept from the Rambam about the straight path, the Derech HaYashar. Rambam says every character trait that we have exists on a continuum. Right? You could be to one extreme, to the other extreme, or you could be somewhere in the middle. And the Rambam prescribes for us that we should try to find a middle path, not be at one extreme or another, but fall somewhere in the middle. He says the straight path is the mean disposition, I thought that was really funny. A mean disposition, right? Mean meaning the average here, right? The mean disposition found in each and every tendency of all the human tendencies. Such tendency is removed from both extremes an equal distance and is not nearer to one than the other. Therefore have the wise men of yore commanded that man should ever review his tendencies, estimate them, and direct them toward the middle path, so that he will be sound in body. How may one do it? He should not be an excitable person, easily angered, nor like the dead without feelings, but adopt a middle course. He should not be too close-fisted, nor yet squander his money, but give tzedakah within the means of his hands and lend accordingly to the needy. And this path is the path of the wise men. Every man whose tendencies are mean tendencies of the middle course is called wise. Okay, so when I first learned this, I thought that what that meant was we should strive to always be in the middle. But when I was talking about this with my husband, he said, that's not what the Rambam means. And my husband is better versed in the Rambam than I am, but he also explained to me how we know what the Rambam means, which I'll explain to you in a minute. So the Rambam doesn't mean that you should always be exactly in the middle. What the Rambam is saying is we should be in control. When a person is at one extreme or another, then the character trait is controlling them, right? Then they just become an autopilot. You know, if a person is just a super giver all the time, then they're just giving, and they're not necessarily thinking about what they're giving, and they're not necessarily thinking is that the right thing to do in this situation, and that's like, you know, doormat syndrome, right? Or, you know, they're going to end up compromising their own well-being or compromising their family or compromising other priorities, right? On the other hand, if a person is so protective of themselves, so protective of their own time and space and money that it's so hard for them to give all the time, then when the opportunity comes where it is the right thing for them to give, they're not going to be able to do it because those anxieties are controlling the person as opposed to that person being in control of the midah. And one of the ways we know that the Rambam means this is because there are two exceptions to this rule about the middle path. And those two exceptions, the Rambam goes on to say, are anger, which we're always supposed to be the extreme opposite of anger. We're always supposed to strive to have inner calm and patience so that, you know, if I have to tell somebody off, I'm not doing it because the anger is controlling me. I'm doing it because I'm making a deliberate decision that that's the right thing to do in this situation. And pride, which is both of those are midas that are known to take over for people and to dictate people's decisions without them really being able to make thoughtful and deliberate choices. So we want to strive to be in control. And part of being in control is being able to be flexible and move along the continuum. Not that we always have to be exactly in the middle, but there are going to be scenarios where the right thing to do is going to be a little more on this extreme or a little more on that extreme. And if I'm not in control of the media and I'm not comfortable moving along the continuum and it's something I've never done before, I'm not going to be able to do that. So if I can kind of like, you know, give myself those gentle stretches like we were talking about last week, if I know that I'm naturally, like I know for myself, I'm naturally probably like less on the giving side, like more on the, you know, self-care and, you know, very, very cautious and like protective of my own time and space. So, you know, I try to think about like, how can I give myself gentle stretches on, you know, to move in the opposite direction so that when those situations come up and I'm called upon to do those things and I know it's the right thing to do, I'll be able to say, I can do this and I know it's going to be okay because I've done this before and it's okay. So that's the idea of the straight path, is to be in control and to achieve the straight path by identifying, like the Rambam says, identifying where we are on the continuum and making a conscious effort to try to stretch ourselves on the opposite side. And, you know, sometimes if I'm on one extreme, I might have to go to the other extreme in order to end up somewhere in the middle. You had a question? Yeah.
So I agree with you on that explanation. But when we were learning about Hani Machlis, I would argue that like she was the extreme in terms of giving and never, rarely ever said no. And as an outsider, I think that that's like something that I don't think I could ever reach that level. But from this description of, or explanation of what the Rambam is talking about, it seems like she would be on the extreme. So how would we like interpret her giving as this middle path, or the middle of to me, it seems like it was extreme. I don't know.
That's a great question. I'm gonna say a thought that I have, but if anybody else, I know other people have read the book and know about the Machlis family and about Henny Machlis, so if anybody else has another thought, you're welcome to share. I think, first of all, every person has their own continuum. Mm-hmm. So, yes, to me it looks extreme, what she did, but she had a very different personality than I do. And I think certain things that would be a huge stretch for me were not as big of a stretch for her. And I interviewed Shira Blumenkranz this week, which I'm going to share a little bit. I don't know if anybody knows Shira Blumenkranz. She does a lot of chesed in the community. And she was describing to me like these incredible things that she does that are, to me, again, like, you know, unreachable, unattainable. And she said, make sure to tell the women in your shir, like, they should do what's easy for them. I just do this because it's easy for me. Like, I don't have to leave my house. Everybody comes to me, you know. And to me, it seemed very extreme, but to her, it was in her CPB, you know. So I think that's one point. And a second point that I would make just from reading the book is that part of the avoda that she tried to do in her life, part of her own growth, was trying to move to the other side of the continuum. And that was something that at the end of her life she was really working on, was advocating for herself and saying no sometimes. So I think, to me, who's trying to move more in that direction, like, it's just really inspiring to see somebody who does that, and it tells me, like, this can be done. I could be a little more flexible. And, you know, for her, she had different things that she was working on.
I had I've been reading the Henny Machlis book, and finally about three quarters of the way through the 600 something pages. And she is so, like, out there. And I started wondering about shy people, introverted people, and if they're sort of excluded from, if this is just by their nature, outside of their comfort level. And then yesterday was the first yard site of Jonathan Sacks, Rabbi Dr. Sir Jonathan Sacks. And I listened to a whole program. It was a beautiful tribute to him. And apparently, he was a very introverted person. And he actually thought that was not good, or maybe not good for what he wanted to do in the world. And he actually worked on himself to become an extrovert and be able to address all these people and relate beautifully one-on-one and one on a thousand equally well. So I just thought that was interesting. Henny, in fact, says that you can have your own private feelings, but the outside of you is public domain, that everyone's looking at you and you need to greet them with a smile. And I'm thinking, and what if you don't feel in a smiley mood? But that was her take, that it's something that you can grow with. Even a whole personality change you can grow with if you will it.
And find a way to make it work for you. Which is a challenge. Okay, thank you. Okay, so that's the Rambam. All right, I'm going to skip some of the questions here. I think we got the main idea. So that's one thing to keep in mind in Chesed, is that, you know, there's this continuum, and trying to just be mindful of where we are in the continuum, and, you know, recognizing that we're not meant to be at one extreme or the other. And the second source that I thought was helpful in navigating this question is from this week's Parsha. This week's Parsha, we have the story of Avraham's servant Eliezer going out to find a wife for Avraham's son Yitzchak. And Eliezer is not sure, how am I going to know if she's the right woman? So he devises a test. The test is, I'm going to ask somebody, you know, I'm a weary traveler, can I have some water to drink? And if she says, I'll give you and I'll give your camels, then I know that she's the right woman. So for years, I thought that what that test meant was that the test is, does she go above and beyond? Avram's somebody who goes above and beyond in chesed. So his daughter-in-law should be somebody who goes above and beyond in chesed. I ask her for X, she gives me X plus Y. But the Beis HaLevi in source number 5, he understands this test differently. He says it's not about going above and beyond. You have to look at the nuances of what's happening. When Eliezer approaches Rivka, what's she holding in her hands?
A pitcher, a jug, a bucket, right?
She's not holding a cup. So he's going to approach this lady and say, I've just been traveling all this distance. I'm really thirsty. Can I have some water from your jug? Right? Okay, stranger comes up to you, says, can I have a drink from your water bottle? What's the concern?
Just keep it.
Right. There you go, right? Germs, right? Even back in the day, they still had concerns about germs. So he said, on the one hand, she needs to be a Baalat Chesed. If she's just going to say, no, excuse me, this is my water bottle, germs, you know, that's not the person to marry into Avram's family. But on the other hand, if she says, oh, yeah, of course, take a sip, and then goes and brings that back to her family, she just doesn't have any seichel. Like, she doesn't have it. She's not using her brain. Like, that's not safe. You don't know who I am. You don't know where my mouth has been, right? So she's going to have to balance all these different factors here and think about a way to navigate that without hurting my feelings. And that's the wife for Avram's son. So he goes to Rivka, and sure enough, he says, you know, can I have a drink from your water? And she, what's going through her mind is, I want to help, but I want to take care of the germs factor, and here we are, a situation where my own well-being and my family's well-being should not be sacrificed in for the sake of helping another person. So is there a way that I can do all of that? Yes, there is. I'm going to give you to drink, and oh great, there's water left over. Would you like to give to your camels also? So she passed the test. But not only did she pass the test, she says, I'm not just going to let you take for your camels until a pitcher's empty. She passes the test with flying colors because she says, no, your camels should drink until they're full. And she goes back to the well and brings more water and goes back to the well and brings more and more and more and more and more and more water until she's sure that she's totally masked her real purpose and that Eliezer is not going to be insulted and thinks that it's because of germs because she's already like gone so above and beyond. That was the test. And, you know, I was reflecting on this idea of chesed with chachma and balancing these different values and knowing when to say yes and how to say yes and when to say no. And I thought, that is the perfect person to continue Avram's legacy. Because I think Avraham is the ish ha-chesed, the av ha-chesed. He is the person who invented chesed and owns chesed. And he has our paradigm of chesed. But I think it's not only because he went above and beyond, which he did, you know, really rolling out the red carpet for his guests and going to such efforts to do chesed for other people. But he's really the Ava Chesed because he was in control of it. And he knew when to say no. And that many of the tests that Hashem gives him are the tests of, what if you have to kick your son out of your house and say you're a bad influence? Here's the line. What if I call upon you to sacrifice your son and you don't even understand why, but you know that this is the right thing to do because God told you to do it? Do you also know how to turn the chesed mode off? And are you really in control of that midah? And because Avraham so owned it, and everything that he did was not just because chesed, 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 but was because I always want to do the right thing. And in 99% of cases, chesed is the right thing, but I also know when it's not the right thing. So Rivka is going to be the one to continue that legacy and be able to be in control of her chesed and be thoughtful, wise about the way that she navigates the chesed. Okay, so keeping those things in mind, I reached out to a few people this week and I was looking for some practical advice about doing the balancing act of chesed and what happens when we have these challenges to chesed and how do we know when to honor them and when to strive to overcome them. So I had a conversation with Rabbi Reese this week and a conversation with Shira Blumenkrantz, who I'll tell you a little bit about in a minute, and a conversation with Rabbi Matenki. And these are some insights that I gleaned from the conversation. So, and these are kind of like three different examples of the balancing acts in chesed, but I think we could probably, you know, make these charts for a lot of the other challenges that people raise. So I asked Rabbi Reese about the values challenges. And he said, on the one hand, we have to recognize chesed is one of the things that the Mishnah says, ein lahem shiur. There's no there's no prescribed amount, right? Many things in Judaism we're told, like, it has to be this big, it has to be this many, it has to be this amount of time. There's no prescription for chesed because chesed is never done, right? As much chesed, if we all do our max of chesed, there's still going to be people out there who need things that, you know, we're not having their needs met. So in the Hamshir, we have to always feel like we need to do more. But on the other hand, Rabbi Reis said, we have other values and priorities that need to be taken into account. And there are times where those values take precedence. And I think sometimes we know, and sometimes we need to consult with somebody else. Sometimes, you know, call a friend or a family member who maybe can give you an outside perspective, or maybe it's even a halachic question that we need to call a rabbi about. But it, to me, it was just helpful to kind of keep those two things in mind. On the one hand, you know, I should always want to do more. But on the other hand, there are times that I need to say no. And that's important to keep in mind. Okay, so when it comes to judgment challenges, so I got an answer from Rabbi Matanky, and I think Shira Blumenkrantz, in conversation with her, helped me to really understand this. Shira Blumenkrantz does a lot of chesed. She grew up with chesed. Her mother, Mrs. Weiner, I forgot her first name, her mother is one of the founders of the Chesed Fund, which started in their house. And eventually her mother asked her if she would kind of supplement the Chesed Fund by doing certain acts of chesed in her own house. And she started this, she calls it a food exchange. People drop off food, people take food. I personally found this to be very helpful because as much as I love Kiwi Kids, there's always like those couple of things that nobody in my family wants to eat. So literally, she lives on Whipple by Chippewa Park. We drop it on her porch any time of day and night. She told me that recently a couple of bar and bat mitzvah kids donated all of their gift money to buy her a fridge for her porch, so she now has a fridge so you can drop off perishables. And, you know, she'll bring them in and she'll organize them, and she said, you know, in my dream house we would have space for this, but in my current house we do it in our living room, and it just takes over the entire living room, and people come all times of day and night and take food. And she talks about all different ways that she's really so thoughtful and so empathic about how she navigates this and trying to make every person feel like a friend and not like they're taking, but like they're giving. And she'll call people up. She said this point, like, she knows a lot of the people who come, and she'll call people up and she'll say, you know, I just got some salmon dropped off. I know you really like salmon. It would really help me out if you could take this off my hands. You know, like, I just, you know, I would really appreciate it. Like, if you could use it, you know, save it from the garbage. Like, what a chesed you could do for me. And just many, many other stories, many other ways. If we do continue with a chesed vad, she's coming to speak, I decided. There's a lot more that she had to say. But I asked her about this question of judgment, and I was honest with her. I said, Rabbi Matanky gave me an answer, but I didn't like the answer. So I said, maybe you can explain the answer to me. And I felt like she did. She brought it to life. On the one hand, halacha demands that we judge the legitimacy and the comparative value of chesed opportunities. So we do have to judge. You know, she told me, she said, honestly, I have been in situations where, this is very few, most of the people that she deals with are, you know, very lovely and honest, wonderful people, but she said, occasionally, I'll have somebody who I know is lying. Like, they'll say, like, you know, I really need this meal, and she'll call up some, you know, a different organization, and she'll say, like, you know, I was reaching out, this person needed help, and they're like, yeah, we already sent her that meal. So she said, sometimes I know that a person is lying. And in that case, we have to judge the legitimacy of that chesed opportunity. I'm not going to give my meiser money. I'm not going to give my 10% that I'm obligated to give to tzedakah to this person who may or may not really need it. You know, if I have something in the house that is of a lot of value, you know, maybe I won't put it out when that person comes. But on the other hand, not to judge the person themselves. And she said, whenever I'm in that situation, and this is one of the quotes around the room, whenever I'm in that situation where I'm thinking this person doesn't really need it, then I tell myself, this person needs something else. This person obviously has an emotional need, and I'm filling an emotional need. You know, it's that not everybody's coming knocking on my door. Most people would not want to do that. This person obviously has an emotional need to feel like they feel like they need this. So I'm filling that emotional need. So halacha encourages us not to judge the person in themselves, and this was very hani machlis, to see the diamond in every situation, in every person, sorry, and to give them the benefit of the doubt. So to me, that was very helpful to understand the difference between judging the situation and judging the person. And I asked Rabbi Reese this question about the comfort zone question, which was one of the challenges that was submitted, and also what you brought up in terms of somebody being introverted. And Rabbi Reese said, on the one hand, people should go with what's comfortable for them. As a general rule, God gave us certain character traits, a certain personality, and that is directing us toward our mission in life. And that's direct. You know, there are many, many types of chesed that are great for introverted people, that are great, you know, behind the scenes chesed, and maybe other people are not going to do those. So if that speaks to you, great. And on the other hand, there are times when God sends us something, and then we have to really accept it, right? That when God sends us a certain challenge, maybe it's in our family, and, you know, we can't just pass it along to another family, or maybe it's something that shows up on our door, or somebody, you know, calls us, and they're calling us, and they're not calling somebody else, right? So in those situations, that's the time when we're called upon to try to stretch ourselves, maybe go outside of our comfort zone a little bit. And I don't know about you, but I feel like many of us learned in COVID that we can do a lot more things that we maybe thought we never could do. So sometimes when we face these challenges, we realize that we actually had a lot more within us than we thought we had. Which is amazing to hear that was a challenge of Rabbi Sacks. Rabbi Reese also shared a story about he was in a certain situation, and he was at somebody's house, and he was out of town, and the thermostat was not set to a comfortable temperature, and the wife in the family was very uncomfortable, and Rabbi Reese felt that it was a situation where normally we shouldn't ask a non-Jew to do something that's against Shabbos for you on Shabbos, but he felt that this was a situation where it was warranted. And it was 10 o'clock at night, and he was in a neighborhood where he didn't know anybody, but for whatever reason, he knew that he was the person who needed to do it. And he said, it was very out of my comfort zone. Like, I'm also an introvert. It's super awkward to go over, you know, to a stranger's house and say, you know, can you please change our thermostat because we can't do it because it's Sabbath, right? But, like, very awkward conversation. But he said, I knew I was the person who needed to do it. And so he said, Baruch Hashem, I passed the Nisayon, and I was able to do it. So just recognizing when those opportunities come to us, then it's an opportunity to stretch, but that we don't necessarily have to seek those out. And like Shira Blumenkranz said, you know, to try to find what's in our easy spot. Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Going back to the judgment challenges, maybe I'm just not as nice as Shira Blumenkranz. I mean, I'm sure I'm not, but I feel like if someone is being manipulative and lying about their needs, like, yes, on the one hand, it's clear that they have an emotional need, and on the other hand, aren't I being an enabler? You know, is it not like enabling, you know, dysfunctional, you know, behavior patterns for me to feed that emotional need? Like, I feel like that person needs, you know, professional help, you know, and not to like continue to let people feed their emotional needs that are unhealthy.
So I think it's a question for a Rav. Uh-huh. I think many of the values questions are, because I think it's really complicated, and I don't think that we can necessarily make that call. And I, you know, by saying no, is that going to make the person get the help that they need? Is the person going to be better off because we said, first of all, you know, you have to judge for yourself. If this is a boundary crossing for you, which Shira Blumenkranz might be in a different place than most of us, right? So if that's just not something that you're comfortable with, or you feel like, you know, whatever, it's coming at a cost for you that you're not comfortable with, then that's its own consideration. But if it's just a question of what is best for this person, then I feel like I would think that, you know, somebody else needs to be consulted about how to navigate that, because I think it's a very complicated question, and I think that could apply to many of the stories with Hani Machlis also. Of, you know, there were people who, yeah, they probably could have used professional help, but they weren't getting professional help, and they weren't going to get it if Hani turned them away. So then, what do you do in that situation? You know, can you? I don't know.
So, I think this comes up a lot with tzedakah, right? Somebody asks you for tzedakah. Our job isn't to decide whether or not they need it. Our job and our mitzvah is in the giving. So if you're doing chesed for your own mitzvah, it's not for us to decide if this person needs it or not. You're meeting your own need for chesed, and you're clearly doing something that benefits the other person, whether or not they actually need this meal or this money or this ride, because I don't think we're there to assess that.
So the reason why I didn't like Rabbi Matanky's answer is because he was saying that there is a place for judgment in these situations, and that was really threatening to me because it has been incredibly helpful for me to try to take judgment out of it. Not that I'm good at it. It's something that I'm really working on. But just, you know, when somebody asks for chesed, there's 1,000 things that pop into my mind that are becoming barriers. And at a certain point, I said to my husband, I said, is it still a mitzvah even if they don't really need it? And he said, yeah, it's still, you know, a question of mice or whatever. That's maybe a question for a rabbi. But like, I still did a chesed, even if they didn't need it. And for me to just take that piece out of it and say, I'm getting so much from this. I'm growing as a person from this. And I'm giving them something. And I don't have to now go into this whole, like, what do they really need? And should I get them more help? Or should I turn them away? It was just making everything so much more complicated, and it was making me focus on judgment all the time, which was such a non-constructive use of my mental space. I'm like, there's so many other things that I could be working on than judging everybody all the time. So I tried to start taking that out of it, and then when Rabbi Matanky said, well, you know, it is important to judge, I'm like, no, don't tell me to judge. This has been, like, life-changing for me. So I found Shira's advice helpful. You know, you're judging the situation and you're not necessarily judging the person. I would love more of the wisdom from the room.
We need to change the word judge maybe to assess.
Yeah. Evaluate.
Because if I have a limited amount of resources, whether it be time, money, or anything else, it seems more feasible if I have X amount of time, then I'm going to assess where that time is going to be best spent. But if I'm saying I'm judging somebody, like, who am I to judge what somebody else needs? I can't do that. So I don't know, part of it is the word that sounds very harsh. But either way, I agree with you that what we do is still chesed whether or not this person actually needs it. And who decides that?
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I think by saying you're judging the opportunity versus, and I agree that judging might be not the best choice of words, but you're saying I can do this much, and is this opportunity something that I want to be spending my resource on, or is there a different opportunity that might be better to spend my resources on?
Yes, agreed. Maybe weighing. Navigating. Yeah.
So one of the things that I've used in the past that helps me kind of think about this thing, and I think it makes a difference when somebody's like coming to you for a direct ask versus like when you have time and you're trying to allocate it. But one of the things that I've always kept in mind, and it just works for my psyche, is that like I ask Hashem for things all the time. Lots of things that I probably don't need, don't deserve, probably whatever. And like I don't really want Hashem to pick apart whether or not, you know. And so I always try to keep that in my mind, that hopefully if I can develop that automatic, like, okay, I can do this, then hopefully, like, I will be treated in a similar way when I'm asking for things that I probably don't need or deserve, you know. And it always helps me a little bit that I can try to cultivate that response.
I love that. That is somewhere, as I treat others, Hashem will treat me. I feel like that's somewhere around the room. As I act toward others, God will act toward me. I love that. I think those are all really helpful things to keep in mind. And I think it's also, it's personal. It's personal toward the person you're giving to, and it's also personal toward yourself and, you know, what what each person's own avoda is that they have to work on. And if we're trying to stretch ourselves a little bit, you know, it's not, might be a really great exercise to just try to take the judgment out of it and think of the person as, you know, like Hani Malchus would have said, this could have been me. Hani Malchus would have said, you know, that I'm only seeing one page of their book. I don't understand the whole story. Like, who am I to judge what this person needs? I have no idea. So there's many ways that we can reframe it, but I think it very much depends on the person. Any other questions or comments on that topic? Okay, I really appreciate everybody's thoughts. Okay, so we talked about identifying the challenges, we talked about thinking about chesed in balance with other factors and what are some of the considerations that might come into play, and that there are many situations where we might say, this is the time to say no. And being in control of our midas ha-chesed allows us to move along that continuum with flexibility. When it comes to something that we strive to overcome, I just tried to think of five things that are helpful to me when I identify a barrier and I think, you know, this is really, I feel like a shortcoming in myself, and I wish I did feel more comfortable with this chesed situation. So I'm going to try to work on that. So five things that help me are adopting a role model. So Hani Malchus is one of my role models, but I'm building my list. Finding a partner for support, employing self-talk and reframing, looking for gentle stretches in my free choice battle zone, right, in my CPB, and finding creative solutions, right? That's the chesed with chachma piece. So I thought let's take one of these barriers as an example, and I took the last one. I feel like chesed encourages others to take advantage of me. I don't want to be a doormat, which is the word doormat, like, just pops into my mind all the time. I think it's something that's also, like, societal a little bit. Like, we're very much trained, like, don't be a doormat, right? So one of the places where this comes up for me all the time is in my house and with my kids, right? So not that they're trying to take advantage of me and not that they're trying to turn me into a doormat, but I feel like a shmata at the end of the day. Like, I feel like totally used, right? So thinking about Hani Malchus and thinking about who can I partner with for support, so I know that, you know, thank God this is something that I can talk about with my husband, but also that we all have to remember that we can talk to Hashem. And, you know, I think I just did it today. I was having, like, an exasperating moment with one of my children. I took a moment. I'm like, Hashem, like, help me to be the mother that my children need me to be. Because at the moment, I was just feeling like I cannot do it. But God is limitless. So if I could partner with God, I'm in a good place. Okay, then employing self-talk and reframing. So I put around the room, these are quotes from various people, and also just some mantras and ways of reframing that have been helpful to me. There's always so many ways of looking at a situation, and sometimes if I could just look at it from a different perspective, it changes everything. So reminding myself, I'm taking care of God's children. Like, what? I'm not a doormat. I'm, like, doing the most important job in the world. Like, and, you know, and thank God that I have children, and thank God that I have such smart children who are always thinking of new ways to get on my nerves. Right? My mother always says that most difficult children make the best adults. So that's another way to reframe it. Like, look what independent thinkers they are. And, right? It just helps put a positive spin on it. Looking for gentle stretches in my free choice battle zone. So, again, this is only, like, one tiny example, but when I'm doing a household chore, when I'm doing something as a parent that does not feel like the most, you know, glorious thing to be doing with my time, making a conscious choice to do it graciously. I'm going to be doing this anyway. So let me do it with a smile. Let me do it thinking about, you know, how amazing it is what I'm doing. And finding creative solutions so, you know, we can find ways to try to make the household chores fun, make them more interesting, you know, which I try to, like, use. Sometimes I tend to be, like, take myself way too seriously, so trying to, like, incorporate more humor into things and make a joke out of it, and, like, sorry, no more whining for the day, you've fulfilled your quota, you know, aren't you, you're not 21 yet, no whining, and music, and making, like, little jingles out of things, and songs to help just make it a little bit lighter and a little bit more manageable. Okay, so I'd like to ask you before we wrap up to take a couple of minutes and choose one of the challenges that you that resonated with you from the list before, and take a couple minutes to think about how who could be a role model for you. It could be somebody who you know. It could be somebody who you've learned about that you could kind of keep in mind when you face this challenge of what would that person do, and can I channel a little bit of that person right now? Is there somebody that you could partner with for support? Actually, Shira Blumenkrantz told me that she, like when she deals with sometimes more challenging people, like she has friends who she calls who are like on the same page as her, and she'll call them and they'll give each other chizuk. You know who you're going to call who's going to validate all of your negative feelings, and you know who you're going to call who's going to say, no, you're doing the right thing, keep persevere, you can do it, you're awesome. So depending on the situation, you're going to choose which person to call. Can you find a mantra that you can tell yourself? Can you find a way to reframe the situation that will make it easier to overcome? Are there ways that you can kind of practice gentle stretches when you're not in the moment, when you're not called upon to do something on the spot, but just kind of saying like, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to do this little exercise. It's just going to move me a little around on the continuum and get me a little bit more flexible. Again, in a way that's gentle and realistic, and can you find creative solutions, find creative ways to say yes to those situations? So I'll just take 1 or 2 minutes, and if you want to jot down any notes, you can, and then we'll wrap up. No pressure. You can always skip it or do it on your own later or whatever. And feel free, I hope the quotes on the wall are helpful. I'm like, well, this is a lot more than I pictured it being. And if there are any that you don't understand, I'm happy to explain them. They all made sense to me, but some of them might be a little bit confusing out of context.
Would it be helpful to anyone else if someone read them out loud? I can't see.
Or would you have them
in
one like document where you can just email them to us? I think that's nice to keep.
I could, yeah. Yeah, sure. I could email them out. I won't read all of them, but I'll read a few. Hashem is so proud of me. I find that really helpful, especially when we don't always get recognition from other people, to know that cha-ching, we're racking it up there. Hashem is really proud of us. When I asked Shira Blumenkrantz about, I said, like, does it ever get you down? And she said, it definitely does sometimes get hard to see, you know, very difficult situations. But she said, you hope that the hurt should motivate you and make you grateful for what you have. So trying to, you know, when we see a difficult situation, instead of letting it pull us down, thinking about how can this be an opportunity to help somebody? Maybe I could be that puzzle piece to fill in what's missing. The more pain, the more gain. I like that one when I commit to do a chesed and then it ends up being way more annoying than I thought it was going to be. So, you know, and sometimes I have to let the person know, like, this is way more annoying than I thought it was going to be, so sorry. But sometimes I, you know, if it's just a little bit of a stretch, I can think, wow, you know, I didn't even realize I was going to get so much reward for doing this mitzvah. And here, now that I already committed to it, I'm going to see it through.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
So, I get it, and in the way you explained it, does this apply also to, I feel like part of what we're saying is like stretch yourself a little bit, but like know where you, what you're able to do. So like you were saying, Shears Blumenkrantz says like, it's in my house, it's already here. Like it's not hard for her to do. I mean, I'm sure it is, but like what you were saying.
Right.
So
does that invalidate in a way what she's doing, because it's not a lot of pain for her?
So she said you should do what's in your easy spot, and she actually specifically said, she said, never think that, like, you know, this isn't such a big deal what I'm doing because it's in my easy spot. First of all, you're still helping somebody, which is huge. Secondly, you know, from what Rabbi Reese was saying, you know, that it's like, if it's easy for you, that means that's what you were born to do, you know? So this might be your mission in life, you know, which is awesome. But third, even when it's easy for you, it's often still hard, you know? So even if it's in a spot, you know, it's a type of chesed that might be comfortable for you, but there's always ways that it stretches us and challenges us, I find. Okay, so I'll just end with one last story. This is a story from my sister Shira. Thank you. So Shira told me this story that when she was working at Bruria High School in New Jersey a number of years ago, she was running the special ed program there for students with learning disabilities and various social and emotional struggles. And she was working with somebody named Miriam Nekritz. Yeah? Okay, so Miriam wanted to bring a chesed program to the girls in the special ed program in Berea, and she was looking for a speaker to kick off the program. So she told Shira, I'm gonna bring in Rebbetzin Shevi Yudin. So Shira didn't know at the time who that was, and she said, oh, what organization does she run? And Miriam kind of looked at her with a funny face, and she said, you'll see when she comes. So Rebbetzin Yudin came. She, at the time, was the Rebbetzin in Fair Lawn, New Jersey. And she was already a little bit older, and, you know, she couldn't stand, and her voice couldn't carry so much. And, you know, Shira said, like, all of the things that we train our teachers in the special ed program to do, is, you know, to jump around the room and to engage the girls and to, you know, use proximity and all these different things, she didn't do any of them. She sat at a table with the girls, and she spoke in a quiet voice, and she just told them stories about the chesed that she does, and she had them in the palm of her hand. And she just goes on and on about, you know, she's not in charge of an organization, she does not get paid for what she does, she just is a full-time Baalat chesed. And, like, she's like the Rebbetzin Machlis of Fair Lawn. She told story after story about what she calls the chesed boomerang, that when you give, it comes back to you. And I was debating tonight, I wanted to end with a story, and I had two stories that I was debating which one to share. One of them was this story, and the other one was a story about somebody who really, like, went, you know, really gave a lot of themselves to help another person, and it ended up very much helping them in the end. They didn't, you know, they meant it to help the other person, but it ended up really, like, you know, doing something amazing for them, and there we go, chesed boomerang, right? That was the story that I was thinking about sharing. But I thought, even though that's, like, you know, maybe a more impressive story, that's not what it's about. It's not about, you know, if I give, hopefully one day it'll come back and, you know, I'll get way more for myself. When Rebbetzin Yudin talked about the chesed boomerang, she talked about how when she gave, it came back to her. How did it come back to her? In more chesed opportunities. You know, I took in these two orphans, and, you know, for a short period of time, and it turns out that they loved us so much that they wanted to stay with us, and we adopted them. That's the chesed boomerang, right? You know, I went to all this effort to buy these girls matching dresses for a wedding, and they sent us a picture. Chesed boomerang, right? But what's really, really amazing about this story is that she really felt chesed boomerang. She really felt that she was gaining so much more than what she was giving. So I want to end with the bracha. First of all, with a message that, you know, we do not have to be in charge of an organization in order to be a chesed inspiration to other people. It's about finding those opportunities in our daily lives and what's realistic and what's energizing and strengthening for us, and saying yes to those opportunities, and finding small ways to grow. And secondly, I want to end with the bracha that that we should all feel the chesed boomerang, that we should all see the ways, and however much we invest in chesed, that we should see the ways that it benefits us, and we should get strength and inspiration from our own chesed and be able to constantly grow.